Hello, it's Harry Brook here, Ag Fieldman with Flagstaff County. And today we're talking to Christina Henk, who is a expert, if I might say, on camelina. She is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, working out of Saskatoon. And her current work that she's been working on is actually plant breeding with camelina. And so today's talk is about camelina.
You're listening to the official podcast of Flagstaff County.
So, Christina, can you tell me a little bit about this plant?
Sure. Hi, Harry, and thanks for having me on. So camelina is a really interesting and exciting plant. It's an ancient plant that has been grown in other places in the world, such as Europe and Russia, for thousands of years. But it's a relatively new crop for North America. So in the first time that researchers in Canada looked at camelina as an option, mm-hmm. as a crop, was in the early 1960s. And what the researchers noted back then, what they were most impressed by, was the early maturity of camelina. And mm-hmm. it matured about 3 to 4 weeks earlier than flax. But then it took until the early 2000s until other people looked at camelina again.
Yeah.
So that happened in Saskatoon by two researchers at the Saskatoon Research and Development Center. The one was a breeder, the other one a person from the Canadian Gene Bank, and they grew a number of camelina lines in Saskatoon, in Scott, and in Beaver Lodge. And they were really impressed to see that this scrawny little plant had actually a quite impressive yield potential, that it was early maturing, that it had a high oil content, and that it was virtually immune to flea beetles. And all that basically without really any breeding. So mm-hmm. all these lines, you know, they just came fresh from the gene bank and hadn't mm-hmm. been worked on by breeders. So, and based on those results, Kevin Falk started a small breeding program at AFC based out of Saskatoon. Yeah. And that was in about 2007. So when I joined AFC in 2017, we have made that program quite a bit bigger since I took it over.
Well, I really like the fact that it's resistant to flea beetle. Do you know why?
No, we don't yet know why that is. So there are theories out there. So it might be because camelina plants have a component that acts as a feeding repellent. Okay. So the flea beetles, they don't like it. Or it might actually be that the camelina plants don't provide a feeding cue to the flea beetles. So it means that the flea beetles actually don't realize that they could eat it.
Because once you identify that, I was thinking how it'd be possible to actually breed that into our canola.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point, because I'm involved in an ADF project with Isabel Parkin, where we are looking at exactly that. We're trying to find out why flea beetles don't damage camelina. And then the ultimate goal of that project is to possibly introgress that trait into canola.
Wow, that is impressive. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's also ambitious, but
you gotta
that's start. Research.
Shoot for the moon. You're going to hit, maybe you hit the stars.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So camelina is, I've heard about it probably for about the last 10 years. And there have been some plots and some small scale farms have tried it out, especially Southern Alberta. What's the soil area or the area would be best suited for?
Yeah. So camelina is a crop that has a short growing season. So it's really well suited for the Canadian prairies. And the short growing season makes it a really good fit actually in areas like the Peace River region even. But also the fact that it is drought tolerant makes it a good fit in the brown soil zone. So what we call the Palliser Triangle, you know, southwestern Saskatchewan and southeastern Alberta. But generally, camelina is well adapted to to all kinds of climates, all kinds of soil types. It generally does better on lighter soils mm-hmm. or sandier soils. In Germany, it was, for example, grown after the 1950s as the rapeseed of the sandy soils.
Okay.
What it really doesn't like is to get its feet wet. So it doesn't like waterlogged soils.
Heavy soils are very
heavy. Exactly.
Okay. So what are the uses of camelina? I guess that's part of it. You know, you're going to grow something, you better be able to use it for something useful.
Yes, yes. And that was, that was one of the challenges and one of the reasons why camelina never really took off. Mm-hmm. But that has changed a lot. Camelina has a whole range of very versatile uses that range from using the oil as a biofuel mm-hmm. or as a jet fuel, or using the oil as an edible oil, or as a feed supplement for companion animals like horses and yeah. dogs, or as a feed ingredient in aquaculture to replace fish oil.
Okay. When it comes to, if it's a human consumption oil, how's its stability?
Yeah, that's a good question, because camelina's fatty acid profile, which is characterized by a quite high percentage of unsaturated fatty acid. Fatty mm-hmm. acids would make you assume that it actually is quite unstable, similar to flax oil or yeah. to fish oil. But camelina oil also has very high content of vitamin E or gamma tocopherols, mm-hmm. and those act as antioxidants. And so this combination provides camelina with a much longer shelf life than you would expect from simply looking at the fatty acid profile.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. And that's also why, you know, a lot of feed companies are interested in camelina oil and camelina meal. Camelina meal is approved by the CFIA as a feed ingredient mm-hmm. in the poultry industry, for example, for layers. Yeah. And broilers.
And is it being used at the moment?
Yes, it is. Yeah, there are companies feeding it, to their chickens. For example, companies like, the three farmers, they offer camelina oil as an edible oil. The company Smart Earth Camelina Corporation has oil that goes into the horse market or the dog supplement market, and they sell their meal to the poultry industry. They also sell the oil into the aquaculture industry, which is a very big market. Mm-hmm. And with the with the start of the Biden presidency in the United States and the change in the policy around biofuels, there is now again a greater interest in camelina as a feedstock for biofuel applications.
Well, I remember just before, might have been 2010, 2012. We heard a lot about camelina as a jet fuel. And then all of a sudden, the price of, probably 2013, the price of oil kind of tanked. And all of a sudden, it just sort of disappeared. But I know it had got approval from the U.S. as a jet fuel.
Yes, and that's true. And that was really kind of a very sad point in camelina's history, because yeah. back then, you know, quite a few farmers grew camelina mm-hmm. and then the companies, they were hit by the drop in the oil price, and they then couldn't fulfill the contracts and they didn't pick up the grains and they didn't pay the farmers, and that really burned a lot of farmers. And
right. You
know, back when I worked at Smart Earth Camelina, it took us a lot of convincing and doing a good job to change farmers' minds, to actually give camelina a second chance and grow it again.
It sounds like right now the price of petroleum products going up, mm-hmm. all of a sudden it could become very competitive again.
Right, right. And what we are hoping is also that the policy environment for biofuels in Canada is going to change. Mm-hmm. You know, similar to what it has done in the United States. And it does look like that might happen. So that's a good sign.
It's a growing market right now, is it?
And it is, definitely, yes.
And they're definitely looking for new growers. Could you tell me, what kind of a seeding rate would you be looking at on a per square meter basis?
I can tell you. So like the plant densities that you want to be targeting per square meter are 80 to 180 plants per square meter, or roughly 8 to 18 plants per square foot. Right. And that translates to a seeding rate of 5 to 6 pounds per acre, maybe a bit more on the headlands.
Okay, what about the fact that the seed's quite a bit smaller than canola? I know with canola, usually at best, you can expect half the seeds you plant actually will germinate and establish as plants. Is that the same issue with camelina?
Yes, that is the same issue. So camelina seed, you are right, they are quite small. They are about a third of the size of canola seed. And in studies that Eric Johnson, who used to work at AFC, has done with his colleagues at a number of sites, the average germination rate of camelina was 42%. Oh. So while you can already theoretically have sufficient stands if you just seed 2 pounds per acre,
right,
the increase in seeding rate really helps to account for the seed losses during the soil preparation and planting, or the lack of moisture, and also the competition with weeds.
Okay, so has anyone done any work like zero tilling? Because how shallow would you have to have that within the top half inch, I would assume?
Yeah, so we recommend to seed it at a quarter of an inch.
Okay.
And don't go deeper than half an inch. And what is also extremely important is that you have a good seed to soil contact,
right,
with the seed being so small. That being said, camelina can be seeded with air seeders, can be drill seeded. And what a lot of people do is they actually broadcast it with something like a Valmar.
Okay, and then they would probably lightly harrow afterwards, harrow pack it.
Exactly, yeah,
right.
That's
okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what's its productivity?
What's its productivity? Good question. So when you're growing camelina, depending on where you grow it, you can expect yields anywhere from 25 to 40 bushels an acre.
Okay.
And then, you know, we've had really good crops that were closer to 45 and also 50 bushels an acre, but those are really bumper crops.
Well, and that's unusual when you think of it, because I remember, I'm old enough to remember when canola first hit the market, when it was just rapeseed and then went to canola. And the big thing there was the 20 bushel club, you know. Wow, if you can grow 20 bushels of rapeseed, you're really, you know, top of your game.
Yeah, so see, we already, you know, we have a good start. Yeah. So, you know, and there are still lots of room for improvement. Smart Earth Camelina Corporation, they have a really good camelina variety, Cypress, that on average yielded 42 bushels per acre. In research trials.
And how many sites would have that been growing on?
Those were 23 sites.
Oh, wow. So it's fairly, it's got a good R factor.
Yes, it does.
Okay. What kind of fertility is required for it?
Yeah, so when people first got interested in camelina, you know, there were some that said camelina didn't require any nitrogen inputs. And that's really not true. There have been many, many studies that showed that camelina is responsive to nitrogen, like you would expect for a brassica crop. However, the maximum nitrogen, or the best nitrogen input for maximum yield, varies from studies to studies. So our recommendations for the Canadian prairie provinces are that if you're on good soil, such as in the black soil zone, the recommendations are to put down 80 to 100 pounds of nitrogen per acre.
Okay.
But if you're in the brown soil zone, so more on the lighter lands, then the nitrogen inputs should be more like 60 to 70 pounds of nitrogen per acre.
Okay. And I imagine isolation of the fertilizer blend from the seed row would be important too. With a smaller seed, it's going to be that much more sensitive to the burning from the nitrogen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, and for example, when people put down sulfur and phosphorus with the seed, the recommendation is to not exceed 25 pounds per acre. combined for both.
That's just of the actual mix, not the actual pounds per acre of phosphorus.
Yes, it's the actual mix. Yes.
Okay, yeah. So a little light hand when it comes to putting it in with the seed.
Exactly. A bit careful.
Okay. Right now, the price of canola is absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it sustained at this level before. And I'm just wondering, what kind of prices does camelina have as far as?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, in order to be competitive, companies that are contracting camelina acres need to orient themselves along canola prices.
Right.
And last year was, for example, a horrid year with canola prices at $16 a bushel. And camelina at that point just couldn't compete with that. So prices are going up for next year. So what I've heard from talking to colleagues in the industry, the price of camelina for next season will be closer to $16 a bushel.
That's really good.
Yeah, we hope so. We hope so. That'll be good enough.
Another question I guess I had would be pests. So mm-hmm. we'll start with the spring season. Is there any seed treatments required, needed? Or is there any seed-borne diseases that would be with that crop?
No, so that's one of the nice things about camelina. So seed treatments are not necessary, and there are no seed-borne diseases. Or diseases that affect seedling emergence.
Yeah.
You know, camelina also has the advantage that it is resistant to blackleg disease and to Alternaria black spot, which right. are important diseases in canola.
Certainly.
That being said, so camelina is susceptible to sclerotinia.
Yeah.
And sclerotinia can become a problem, especially when you put down very high amounts of nitrogen. And camelina is also susceptible to clubroot, which is, unfortunate. We are working on that. We are working on changing that.
Yeah.
And camelina is also susceptible to downy mildew, which is more a disease that's, you know, more specific to camelina. But okay. with the downy mildew, we really don't have any trouble to develop varieties that have decent resistance to downy mildew.
Okay, so it's just a matter of time till you get it incorporated into the genetic material, right?
Oh, we already have it.
Oh, okay.
So. You know, we just need to keep it. So. And then on the insect side, as I've already mentioned, camelina is resistant to flea beetles. It's also resistant to root maggots and to diamond bat moth.
Nice.
And so, where we might see a problem is with Bertha armyworms, because here camelina seems to be as susceptible to Bertha armyworms as canola.
Only as susceptible, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And although leafhoppers don't directly damage camelina, they transmit aster yellows, which is a disease caused by a phytoplasma. And unfortunately, camelina is quite susceptible to aster yellows.
Well, you know, there's only been 1 year that I can recall where we actually had any appreciable losses due to aster yellows.
Right. So, which year was that?
Well, it would have been back about 2013, 2014. And it's one of those things that if you talk to a researcher and you're mm-hmm. researching a particular problem, you'll mm-hmm. always get funding for it because it's a problem 1 year and then you'll never have it again. It's almost
yeah,
guaranteed.
True. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of those things that just depends on what winds we get from the U.S. and you know, that bring the leafhoppers in. Yeah.
Right. So if a person was interested in trying some, you know,
mm-hmm.
being a groundbreaker in their own area, who would they be contacting to check about seed availability, seed costs, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so there are a number of companies that offer seed for sale.
There are the three farmers.
And Smart Earth Camelina Corporation. Another one is Terramax. Those would be the ones in Canada, in Saskatchewan, that are selling seed at the moment. And I believe both Smart Earth Camelina Corporation and Three Farmers offer closed loop contracts for camelina production.
Okay. Well, another area I forgot to talk about which is weeds.
Weeds, yeah. So that's another, issue in Camelinas. The options to control weeds in Camelina are quite limited.
Yeah.
So at the moment, the only herbicides that are registered in Camelina are Assure 2 for the control of grassy weeds. And as of 2020, Edge received minor use registration for pre-emergence weed control.
Okay.
So, many do a pre-seed burn-off with glyphosate. But then after emergence, there's really no option to control broadleaf weeds. Mm-hmm. With one exception, and that is a herbicide-resistant Camelina cultivar that is being released by Smart Earth Camelina Corporation for production next spring. Okay. And this Camelina cultivar has commercially acceptable levels of tolerance to Pinnacle SG, which is
a group 2.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can use then Pinnacle SG in this cultivar after emergence. And it also has tolerance to SU carryover in the soil. Okay. Because what growers should keep in mind is that when they grow Camelina, it's quite sensitive to group 2 carryover. So it should not be grown in the year after a group 2 has been applied. And with this cultivar, it will tolerate SU carryover, but not IMI carryover. And that's just due to the nature of the mutation in this particular variety.
Okay, so probably good advice for it if you're going to grow it is grow it on a clean piece of land.
Exactly. Yeah. Early on a clean field. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, sure sounds like an interesting crop. I'm going to be looking forward to seeing what happens over the next few years with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to get a few more crops available to us because so much of our crop rotation, especially in central Alberta, seems to revolve around wheat, canola.
Right.
And I'm seeing diseases, especially black plague. It's always in the background, whether it's a dry year or a wet year. Mm-hmm. And it is taking some yield potential away. And if we keep growing it, it's just going to get to the point we won't be able to grow canola anymore. So it's nice to see there's some other alternatives out there.
Yeah, and Camelina in that case really offers a good measure to break the disease cycle.
Yeah, I especially like the flea beetle aspect of it.
It really takes your mind off it in the spring.
Yeah, you can sort of thumb your nose at the flea beetles.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Christina. I appreciate the information you've given us. Is there anything else that maybe you could think of that I might not have touched upon or you haven't touched upon?
Well, the one thing in terms of harvesting Camelina, which is also nice, is that it has really good shadow resistance, so you can straight combine it. So that is nice. Another thing that is on the forefront of my mind right now is, I've started working on winter Camelina.
Yeah.
And so that's a totally different type of a Camelina variety that is seeded in the fall. It establishes before winter. It's extremely freeze tolerant. So its freeze tolerance is comparable to fall rye. And then, takes advantage of the moisture in the early spring. And then you can take it off in July. And
that sounds like a really big advantage. And it also breaks the disease and weed cycle as well.
Yeah, so with this one, for example, we've seen it's healthier than spring Camelina in general and, has a better oil content, even better oil profile. It also spreads the workload a bit because you're harvesting it already in July.
So what about sort of like polyculture or growing it with some other crop?
Yeah, so both spring Camelina and winter Camelina have been looked at or are being grown in mixed cropping. For example, the three farmers grow all their Camelina in mixed cropping with lentils or peas.
Mm-hmm.
And winter Camelina has been the subject of research in the Northern United States where they look quite a bit at either double cropping or relay cropping. They've done things, for example, where they seeded the winter Camelina into standing corn.
Mm-hmm.
And then it overwintered, and then they seeded the soybeans into the standing Camelina, and then by the time The camelinas ready to harvest and the soybeans are not tall enough to be damaged by the combine. So you actually have three crops in two seasons. So that's pretty neat.
That's like a freebie.
Yeah, you know, and companies that are working in the biofuels market, they are particularly interested in things like carbon intensity scores. Yeah. And if you can grow a crop in a scenario like this, it makes it really attractive as a biofuel feedstock.
So what stage does it overwinter, the winter camelina?
So usually here around Saskatoon, we see that somewhere from the end of August to the middle of September. So you kind of want to seed it about 3 weeks before freeze-up so that it can germinate and establish a few leaves, you know, establish a small rosette to go into the winter. However, what not only our group has seen, but also other researchers, particularly in Minnesota at the USDA, is that even if camelina is only in the cotyledon stage, mm-hmm. so only has these two tiny leaves coming out of the seed, it actually survives the winter just fine.
Wow. That's what I call a tough little plant.
It is a tough little plant. Yes, it's very impressive. I have pictures of it where it just came out of the winter. It's a luscious green. You don't mm-hmm. even see dead leaves or anthocyanin accumulation. And we have lush green leaves with like frost spikes coming out of it. It's so neat. It's very tough. Yeah.
I remember a few years ago, this was Sanola, so it was dwarf sunflowers. But when they get hit by frost, it formed kind of this massive plant with all these different stems coming out. Does camelina work that way with frost?
No, not at all. What in that case would have happened is that the apical meristem dies off, and then that's why the plant produces all the side shoots. But in a true winter camelina, that doesn't happen. However, what we've seen, because there are only about a handful of winter camelina varieties out there, and in order to increase the genetic diversity within the winter camelina, we've conducted crosses between winter and spring camelina. And then what you see in the offspring, you do see some where the apical meristem dies off, and you have plants that produce a whole bunch of side shoots, and you think, oh wow, these fill the plot in so nicely, you know, and you don't really know what to do because there's actually the spring type in there, and you want, you know, want something that's really winter hardy, but then you have this huge bushy plant. So, but what actually happens with those is that they are also more susceptible to lodging, you know, so you really don't want that.
Have you done any work with camelina and potatoes? The reason I'm asking is, one of the biggest problems with potato growers is that the soil is basically almost devoid of organic material to keep it in place and for the winter. Whereas if you used winter camelina, you might be able to actually have some plant growth to hold the soil in place.
Yeah, so you bring up a really, really good point. So I haven't done any work on it yet, but I have talked to a number of potato growers that are interested in winter camelina exactly for that reason. Yeah. And we actually have one large potato producer in Manitoba that seeded winter camelina this fall. And, you know, have spoken to other people around the Outlook area where they have, you know, very sandy soils and they have huge problems with wind erosion. So, and there's also some interest in using winter camelina for exactly that purpose.
Wow, that'd be kind of nice because I know they've been using fall rye to stabilize the soil, but I don't believe they actually ever harvest a crop. It's just basically an expense. Whereas camelina, you'd get paid for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is always good.
Okay. Yeah, you would think so.
Thank you, Christina. It's been very informative, and it'd be interesting to see what the next few years are going to bring.
Yeah, I will keep you updated. And thanks a lot for giving me the chance to talk about camelina.
Thank you so much, and have yourself a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.